to keep that reading in front of you. Welcome, my name's Colin, I'm the pastor. Welcome if you're watching on Zoom as well. Well, time's what we're thinking about this morning. We have lots of language and thoughts around time, don't we? Someone asks you, have you got the time on you? And you tell them, and they look at you as if you're personally responsible for the answer, like it's your fault that it's the time that it is. We've got lots of phrases about time. One of these days, sooner or later, any time now. When did that happen? Just now. Don't you mean just then? Just now? Just then? What's the difference? I don't know. We have small units of time, just a tick, just a sec. We've got big units of time. Oh, they've been gone ages. That AGM went on for yonks, donkey's years. I mean, how many yonks are in a donkey's year? I'm not sure, but I bet it's eons though, and not before the cows come home. Time. And if there's one thing that characterizes time in the West, I guess it's a lack of time that we feel. Who, hands up, who feels like they've got too much time on their hands? Oh, just Peter. Okay, I'm sorry. Not many. And when people ask you, how's your week been? What's your stock standard answer? Busy. We feel lack of time. So we're looking at the book of Ecclesiastes, this frankly weird book, it is a bit. This book of Ecclesiastes, it calls us, we've been seeing, to give up on gain. That is to say, to give up on thinking that anything on this planet we can either make our lives perfect or leave some sort of lasting mark. So far, we've seen that the reason for that, that we can't gain in this world, we can't leave anything behind, is that we're living in a fallen world which God has deliberately frustrated in partial judgment of sin and to protect us from ourselves. And we've seen the proof of that, which is that even this teacher writing this, probably King Solomon, super rich king with all his resources. I mean, he could build a great life. He could do good work. Our work can be important, meaningful. But he couldn't. We can't gain or profit, that is, have to show anything that death won't cheat us out of. We saw last week there is a work. Our work can be really good and meaningful and purposeful, but it won't last forever. But we saw last week there is a work to prioritize because it does last forever. It has eternal value. Labor in the work, Lord, the gospel work of telling people about Jesus and building them up as his disciple. Because that work has results that last eternally. And we've been seeing that this book of Ecclesiastes is a shepherd's goad. In other words, a pointy stick. It can be really confronting and a bit of a jolt at times, but it's held by a good shepherd who's trying to stop us falling off a cliff. It jolts us with the realities of life in order to live, so that we can live a good life with realistic expectations, enjoy it as a gift from God for him, trusting him with it. So today's chapter, the question in today's chapter is, how are we to understand how we find life as it is today, day by day, in all its diversity? How should we understand why life is like it is? And if we can't truly gain in this life, well, what should we do with our time? What should we do with our lives, given that's the reality? And we'll see, to make sense of our lives in this world, we need to look outside of this world. So there's three headings in your leaflet there, if you find that helpful. Time for poetry, big hearts, limited vision, and what to do with our time, live by grace. So first of all, it's time for poetry. All right, here's a limerick that ChatGPT wrote for me about our AGM after the service. There was once a church AGM. Some feared that might feel rather meh. But we work by God's grace to make it a place where we love to reflect and to pray. We'll hear how the ministries fare and the hopes that we're trusting God there. finances too, and leadership news as we look to the future with care. So I'm not going to do the whole AGM as a limerick, I'm afraid. But now I'll read that out, and it's fairly obvious why. It's just to sort of amuse and encourage you to stay for the AGM, tell you a bit about what will happen. But the teacher, this chapter 3 begins with a poem, doesn't it? And it's a beautiful poem, I think you'll agree. And lots of it, you, like the rest of Ecclesiastes, you read it and you go, yeah, it is like that, isn't it? That's pretty on the money. But why is he reading this poem? What does he want us to make of it? What's the intended effect of this poem? The so what? Because you can read it, this poem in verses 1 to 8, and delight in it, can't you? You know, if you're in a tearing down or a weeping time, it's great to be reminded that there will come around a time to build and a time to laugh eventually. Or you could read it negatively. Oh, well, there's something good happening, but bad times are always around the corner. And I think it's cleverly written to hold those things in tension. And we see that with how the poem's bookended, verses 1 and verse 9. So verse 9, the teacher repeats his question, what do we gain from all the toil of these times? And there is a kind of a futility to it. Did you notice that each couplet of the poem cancels itself out? You know, if you're drawing us in a toil versus gain graph, you keep returning to zero. Born, die, plant, uproot. Verse 5, it sounds like the laundry, doesn't it? Scatter, gather, scatter, gather, scatter, gather in an endless cycle, doing the laundry or cleaning your kitchen. There's a futility to it, and yet verse 1, there's a beauty and a richness to the diversity of our time. Verse 1, there is a time for everything and a season for every activity under the heavens. Every day is not the same. There is a right thing to do at the right time. There's good timing to be had that feels good because it's in sync with how things should be. And we just sense, don't we, that the fact that there's this pattern, this difference in diversity, that it all matters. It's all important, even if it is fleeting. So I'll just whiz through it, and I won't do it justice. It's a great poem. But verse 2 sets the parameters, the beginning and end of life. All our years in between have their place and purpose. Verse 2 and 3, there are seasons of establishing things, planting, healing, building, and there are times of destroying things, uprooting, killing, tearing down. Verse 4, all our emotions have their time, privately weeping and laughing, and publicly, mourning and dancing. Verse 5, we have times of friendship, getting on with each other, a time to embrace, and times when we refrain from embracing. And don't you reckon your best friendships have included both those times? The time of refraining tightens the embrace when it eventually comes. Verse 6 and 7, we've got times of being ambitious and possessing things, and times of giving up on things and letting things go, throwing them away. And verse 7 and 8, we go through different times in our relationships, good and bad. And we can all relate to these seasons in our own lives, can't we? Now, some look at all these different circumstances and seasons of life and conclude, oh, it's all just random. But this poem shows us God has made time, has made life to be like this, to be have this diversity. He is in control, sovereign over all our seasons. Verse 11 puts it really nicely. He has made everything beautiful in its time. I mean, kids have great timing, don't they? They want to discuss, have deep existential discussions on the nature of being, usually when you're trying to get them dressed and fed and at school looking like someone cares for their appearance at least a little. But knowing this diversity isn't a fault, but a feature, helps us to live well in the moment we're in, to get our timing right. There's some book called Lord of the Rings, you might have heard of it, and movies, that's 9 hours of my life, I'm not getting back. But there's a character called Frodo. He's got a difficult mission, something to do with the ring he's got to destroy, and it's a really tough gig. So he's talking to the wizard Gandalf, who's a Jedi Knight or headmaster of Hogwarts or something. And am I getting this right now? Anyway, Frodo says to Gandalf about this tough mission he's got. "I wish it need not have happened in my time," said Frodo. "So do I," said Gandalf. "And so do all who live to see such times. But that is not for them to decide. All we have to decide is what to do with the time that is given to us." Get the timing right. Life is mist, vapor, hard to grasp, Ecclesiastes tells us. We can never really work it all out. But it's not meaningless. We sense that all these times matter. It's important that they are different, significant. That resonates with us, doesn't it? We discriminate between these different kinds of times to get them right, the right way of being at the right time. A time for everything. But what do we gain in the end? Now, we can make two different errors knowing these things. We can be too sentimental, or we can be too cynical. Too sentimental or too cynical. The person who's too sentimental enjoys a season like building, laughing, or embracing. Enjoys that time or moment, but wants it or expects it to last forever. They don't get that life goes on, that diversity will inevitably happen. And that's just how life is. So on a big scale, every age thinks it's the one that's getting the times right, that things are progressing. We thought that in the 90s, but recently we've been re-watching the TV comedy Friends with our daughter Miv, and the number of occasions I've had to kind of apologetically saying, "Oh, sorry, there were different times then. You know, something sexist, homophobic, some body shaming. Even what was assumed to be the big happy ending of the show, is it really? Different times. Worst times." And no doubt, we can't be proud though, because no doubt future generations will cringe at the stuff we produce now. The sentimentalist can't see that life moves on. It's got different times. So we can be too sentimental, or we can be too cynical. So the cynic has a clear grasp that life is frustrating and fleeting, nothing lasts, but has got no handle at all on the idea that our actions matter, that life does have meaning and purpose. Happy, sad, laugh, cry, it's all the same, a zero-sum game, so it doesn't matter. Well, that's wrong. Just because life is fleeting, just because times change, doesn't mean it doesn't matter. To illustrate with music, I'm not a musician, but even I know the right chord or note played at the right moment, it can change your mood. It can be profound, a profound experience that moves you. And that's what I think that's the point of live jazz, sort of unplanned, unrepeatable moments where the notes and the musicians just come together perfectly and then the moment's gone. It was a one-off moment, never to be repeated, surrounded by lots of awful noise as well, but that's jazz for you. It was a one-off moment, but significant still. Each season is going to go, going to change, and yet we know it matters. There's a right note to play and the right time to play it. Now, why is it that we know that? Well, the teacher tells us it's because we have big hearts but limited vision. Big hearts, but we've got limited vision. God has put eternity and judgment into our hearts. Eternity and judgment into our hearts. That's why we know the stuff in a fleeting frustration world matters. Verse 10. "I have seen the burden God has laid on the human race. He has made everything beautiful in its time. He has also set eternity in the human heart. Yet no one can fathom what God has done from beginning to end. When you try and stop and think of a golden age or a golden time when everything was just right, well, we can't find it, can we? We never find it in our history, not if we look closely enough, or in our own lives. There's always something, I find myself saying a lot. You know, just when everything seems to be okay, something comes up. There's always something, always some fleck of dried paint on the roller brush of life that's spoiling the party a little bit. Always that red sock in with the whites. Always something. But we have this sense that there is a paradise to be gained. There is a golden moment. There is a home we're supposed to be in. And Genesis, the book of Genesis and the book of Revelation, I think, fascinate us because the eternal realities they depict are in our hearts. You know, a polar bear, for example, doesn't question why it likes fish and seal clubs for breakfast and lives somewhere so cold. But we do. We question our existence. We question our purpose. A child questions it, usually while you're trying to strap them into the car. We question why things aren't better. We have eternity in our hearts. It's because the world is not as God originally made it, and nor is it the world he promises to make. And every one of us knows it. That there's a perfect time God intends us to be part of, and that sets our sense of how things should be. Eternity in our hearts. The things we do matter because eternity is in our hearts and because judgment is in our hearts. Verse 17. I said to myself, God will bring into judgment both the righteous and the wicked, for there will be a time for every activity, a time to judge every deed. And we need that verdict from God. We need to know it's not all lost in vapor. All our times are seen and valued and accurately assessed and judged. It's why no other verdicts that we get ever feels quite enough for us. No matter how much approval we get from other people, how many likes on Facebook, it's never enough because we're wired to hear God's judgment. And there's no voice that can compare with his. So that's the other reason why we feel like our actions matter, because we have eternity in our hearts, and because one day God is going to judge everything we do, and we all sense it. But we only see these things with limited vision. So we're like this rhino for the recording. It's a rhino painting things, and all of his pictures have got a big picture of his horn in the middle because that's what he sees. His vision of any scene is limited. Or think of a tapestry. God can see the front of the tapestry, like sort of a high detail, high resolution sort of full picture from beginning to end. But if you look at a tapestry on the back, well, we can only see our thread. It's some sort of loose end that's part of something more. We can't fully see the order of how it all fits together exactly. Verse 11 again, the end of it says, yet no one can fathom what God has done from beginning to end. We don't have the full picture. We can't know every aspect of life, how it all relates to the moment we're in now. Not well, at least. And I think that is the point that verses 18 and following is making about comparing us to animals. Like the animals, our time eventually comes up. We die. There's still a 100% death rate amongst humans. We're not God. And the teacher, he's not saying we're just like animals, we're only animals. No, he knows we're more than beasts. He knows we have eternity in our hearts. And this talking about judgment suggests he knows the answer to verse 21, that there is life after death. But in verses 18 to 21, he's kind of putting us back in our box, back in our place, so that we know all of the different times we experience in this life, none of them is in and of itself eternal. So verse 10, God is creator. Verse 18, we're beasts. Verse 11, God rules time. Verse 19, our time comes up. Verse 14, God's actions endure forever. Then verse 20, we know that we're just dust. If verse 17, God is the judge, and then verse 21, we know that that's not our seat. And if God has limited us in this way, so that we know our need for him, to know that we can only find our meaning and purpose in him, so that we depend on his grace. Depend on his grace. That's the answer. Our last heading, what to do with our time? Live by grace. We're not to live our lives seeking gain. We can't take it with us. We're not to live life as if life is meaningless. We're not to live trying to make the good moments last forever either, though, because they definitely won't. We can't control the future. We can only recognize the time that we're in. So the answer is to make our lives all about God. So how do we do that? Well, by receiving and revering. Receiving and revering. So on the one hand, we're to make our lives about receiving from God's hand the good gifts he gives us, the times that he gives us, and see them as the good gifts they are. And on the other hand, we are to revere him, that is to fear him, to honour him in the way that we enjoy the good things he gives us, the good times he gives us, and the bad times. Receive and revere. Now, just to explain, to fear God, that's not to be afraid of him. And we talked, Murray Capel at the men's convent yesterday talked about this. To fear God is to take him as he is, to treat him seriously. So like climbing a mountain can be a beautiful, wonderful experience, but you don't treat the mountain as if it's just a stroll in the park. It's potentially dangerous, wonderful, but you take it seriously. Or another way to say we fear God is to say we love him. To fear God is to love him. So receive and revere. So just listen for those ideas. Receive gifts, revere God, fear him, love him. Listen for those ideas in these verses as I read them out from verse 12. I know that there is nothing better for people than to be happy and to do good while they live. That each of them may eat and drink and find satisfaction in their toil. This is the gift of God. I know that everything God does will endure forever. Nothing can be added to it and nothing taken from it. God does it so that people will fear him. And verse 22. So I saw there's nothing better for a person than to enjoy their work, because that is their lot. For who can bring them to see what will happen after them? So whatever time we are living through, we can receive it from God with thanks. We can trust him through the times of tears, of silence, of hate, of knowing that in his grace, he loves us and cares for us. And in doing so, we can revere him. We can seek to live his way, fall on his grace in the way we enjoy our times in all circumstances. And we know even more, don't we? We know more than the teacher did. We know the completeness of God's grace to us in Jesus. So some verses from 2 Corinthians 5 that talk about this. So verse 14. For Christ's love compels us, because we're convinced that one died for all, and therefore all died. In other words, Christ died as our substitute, but not only that, he died as our representative. He died as me, so that his death was also mine. His story became my story when I first believed and trusted in him. We've changed our citizenship from darkness to light, death to life. And Paul's favorite way of saying the closeness of our relationship with Jesus is in Christ. Verse 17 of 2 Corinthians 5. Therefore, if anyone is in Christ, the new creation has come. The old is gone. The new is here. In other words, Jesus has bought us time. infinite, eternal time. Jesus has come in from outside our closed zero-sum loop of time, come into that so that we can break out of it into perfect eternity with him. And in the meantime, that eternal new creation that's begun in us leaks into and transforms all of our times in all their diversity. Eternity leaking into all of our times in the here and now. Verse 15, and he died for all, that those who live should no longer live for themselves, but for him who died for them and was raised again. We're to receive from God with thanks the good things he gives us, and we're to revere him in the way that we enjoy them, with a completely different agenda than we used to have of living for Jesus in all that we do. Receiving and revering. The extent to which we do those two things is the extent to which what we do in this life matters. So not to live for gain, which is pointless, but instead to live by God's grace, which comes to us through Jesus, which gets us through judgment, which is lavished on us now and forever. To live by God's grace, and as we do that, there is a time for everything under God. Finally, and as we saw last week, most importantly, there is a time in all of our times for gospel work. That is the work of telling people about Jesus and building them up as his disciples. And the time we have to do it is short. 1 Corinthians 7 puts it like this. What I mean, brothers and sisters, is that the time is short. From now on, those who have wives should live as if they do not. Those who mourn as if they do not. Those who are happy as if they were not. Those who buy something as if it were not theirs to keep. Those who use the things of this world as if not engrossed in them. For this world in its present form is passing away. Of course, husbands and wives should be looking after each other. Of course, we should mourn at funerals. The point, Paul's point is, the priority, the urgent call that weaves through every kind of time and season and circumstance is to tell people about Jesus and help people grow as his disciples. That eternal gospel work. And actually, as we do that, it makes the way we'd mourn, the way we love our husbands, why all those other things he talked about, it helps, makes us do those things better. We're never going to fully grasp where the times we live through fit in with God's eternal plans. But we don't have to. We just have to know they're a good gift from God. And we should just take them as his gift. Enjoy them. We don't know what God's going to do with our gospel plans. We don't know what he's going to do with our organized evangelism, like our Taste and See course. We don't know what he's going to do with a random half-baked conversation about Jesus you had, where you remembered loads of all the good things you could have said later on. But we persevere at our gospel work because that's what God's commanded us to do, and we fear him, we revere him, we love him. And proclaiming Jesus is a way of receiving what he's given us. It's a gift he's given us because he's gifted us those opportunities. Okay, how are we to understand how we find life as it is today, day by day? Time and eternity are in God's good, kind, and graceful hands. God has set a time for everything, and he's made it so that we never fully work it out, so that we trust and rely on him. And the other thing we're asked, if we can't truly gain this life, what should we do with our time, with our lives? Receive and revere. Receive what he gives as a gift. Enjoy what you can. You're supposed to enjoy lots of life. Trust him through what you can't. And do all that living for him in his strength, knowing that Jesus has bought us time, eternity, and turning all our times to proclaiming him so that others can have that time too. Let me pray. Lord, we thank you for the times you give us. We thank you for the gift of all the enjoyment we have. And we ask for your help and your endurance for the tough times we have. And I do pray for those here today who are having an awful time and they just can't see the way out of. Please sustain them and let them know your love and your care for them. But help us to be getting on in all of our times with that gospel work of proclaiming Jesus and helping each other grow as his disciples. Amen.